and just as hopelessly addicted to alcohol as we were to drugs. We are grateful to the AA Fellowship for showing us the way to a new life. The 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous has adapted from AA are the basis of our recovery program. We've only broadened their perspective. We follow the same path with a single exception. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive in respect to any mood-changing, mind-altering substance. Alcoholism is too limited a term for us. Our problem is not a specific substance. It is a disease called addiction. We believe that as a fellowship, we have been guided by a greater consciousness and are grateful for the direction that has enabled us to build upon an already proven program of recovery.
Thank you.
At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Sean D. from the Rock Creek area.
I'm an act named Sean. So my sponsor just informed me that this room has a capacity of somewhere around 360 people. So that's a little intimidating. But with the help of my higher power, I know I can walk through anything. The topic of this meeting is easing God in, or are you easing God out? Which I was intimidated very much so when that topic was given to me, because I expected that someone to go who is a spiritual giant, as they used to say in the olden days. And I was like, what do I have to offer? And then the self-pity started to creep in, and it was just like wanting to hide, not wanting to show up. But it's not for me to question why things happen and what things are presented to me in my life. I'm just supposed to show up and do the best I can today, not shrink from the fear. Because the same corner that I found myself in at the end when I was using still exists in my mind, that I can take myself there even when I'm not using drugs. And the one thing I have to do is just ask for help. And sometimes that doesn't involve opening my mouth. Sometimes I get this dumb feeling where and the only thing I can do to arrest like this spinning of nonsense, this blender head of just, I'm going to try not to curse, is to show up at a meeting. That's the only thing I can do. But what I'm going to do is work on through this topic through the context of my story, because that's all I really have. So, through working through this program, I realized I had the disease of addiction was alive and well before I ever picked up anything. Through a little work in this program, I seen that, my first drug of choice was fantasy. Just wanted to be someone else, something else, somewhere else, something to be better, something to feel good, feel energized, feel loved, felt liked. And, one of the most profound things I ever remembered was, getting caught up in a lie, getting caught, that fear. And I was a little kid, and my parents asked me what I did at school, math test, build, play with blocks, something along those lines. But I said there was a big car crash outside school, and the teacher was, my mom was upset, so she called the teacher, asked about it, and this was the first hallmark of my addiction. It was just like, when they confronted me, they got video evidence, there's no broken glass, taking me, conference room, small room. Deny. Just everybody's just shaking their head, but I would not give up. But I still wanted to hold on to that idea, because I thought it was interesting when I always had a story, when I always had a smile, that I could get some sort of gratification out of you, and then I could be whoever I wanted. And this started this trend in my life that the ends justified the means. That whatever I had to say or do to get that good feeling was okay by me, and without a second thought. And proceeded that, it's my whole life, it's just relationships turns into this transaction, that whatever I need to get out of you, I would get. And my family would call them phases that I went through. That I went through a period of time in my life where I popped my collar, and I went through a period of my life where I wore parachute pants and painted my hair and my nails. And but I was always searching for that feeling of acceptance, that that groove where everything was going to be all right, because I had this disease inside of me that I just wasn't okay, that nothing was ever enough. There never was enough cartoons. There was never enough food, you know, and I was just bothered inside, you know, like, I had a wonderful set of parents. They did everything they could. Now that I've done a little bit of work in this program, I realize they did the best with what they had. And, you know, and I'm at the end of the... I don't blame, you know, my disease on people, places, or things, or circumstances anymore. It's more about the solution today, that what I want to do about my problem, of where I'm at. And, you know, but I felt so alone all the time, and feeling... You know, I we had a newsletter in my area once, and they said, prep for CPR CNA. And it was just like, on the back of the pamphlet, it was this: if you find yourself in a room of 7,000 people with the floor shaking when they're doing the clean time countdown, they're saying, keep coming back, and the room is shaking, and you've never felt so more alone in your life, then you might be an addict. And it was just like that no one could be like me, no one feels like me, that I could never ever fit in, that you don't understand where I came from and how I feel on a daily basis. And finally I found those people, I found that love, and you know, it was just one bag at a time. It was cool. And it was just like, you hear these cliches, you don't need dope to dance. Well, guess what, I thought I needed it. You know, it was just like when I took that first drug, it was just, I felt smooth. I had glasses. They seemed to melt off. Same with the braces. And before I knew it, I was just, I could talk to anybody. I could go up. And it was just like, I think I was 15, 14 years old. And I thought it was cool. And I thought I just couldn't have a care in the world. You know, I used to, like, I have constantly spinning thoughts all the time, just thinking and thinking and thinking. And it just numbed my brain. And, you know, and I could just get on that single track and I could just look at you and smile. And that's all I did. I could be cool. I could be like Marlon Brando or something. And, but it wasn't. You know, I don't know how it happened, but it was over a summer before I found myself going in and out of to the garden in the southeast. Just, I don't know how it works like that, but it just, the progression, it's bad. And, you know, at first I thought I was just having fun and I was just using with other people and everything was great, you know, and even today sometimes I can fall into the selective memory where I remember I was always surrounded by people. There was pretty girls everywhere. They're all wearing halter tops and we're all playing beer pong and everything's great. But I can't remember the times when I'm using alone, when I'm on the carpet, when I can't find a vein, when I'm just angry and I'm screaming and I want to stop but I can't, you know. You know, I can't remember the times stealing drugs from my mom who needed them, and she didn't have enough at the end of every month. But I would keep taking them, knowing what was going to happen, knowing that I'm going to have to face her, and she'd be crying and asking where the pills are, Sean. And I just say, no, I don't have it. I don't have it, and just sobbing to myself as I was doing it, but never thinking I ever had a problem. That was the other hallmark of my disease. It was the denial that I always thought I was special, that nothing ever applied to me. I never even thought of the word addict or any of the preconceptions of what addiction is, inner city street crime or using needle drugs. And it was just like, but I certainly qualified at one point or another. And but that denial that, like, I never thought I thought I was different. I thought I was special. And I kept going down that track. And honestly, I had to be arrested by something. I had to be stopped. Just full force. And what that ended up coming down to was that, you know, the drugs stopped working for me. And it's not that I stopped getting high. It's not that they stopped numbing the pain. I hated myself when I was trying to find ways and means to get more. And I hated myself when I was high. I hated everything around me was just a world of this shit. And, I would wake up. It was about the third time I would wake up in an emergency room on a Sunday night, surrounded by soccer moms as a Narcan hit, and they would look up to me and was like, "Did you do this on purpose?" And I would, and the first word out of my mouth was like, no, I'm just trying to have fun. And that's how deep level the denial went, that I never had an idea that I was trying to kill myself on a daily basis, that my whole life and being was centered around selling everything I could get my hands on to go get and use, that I had no other purpose in my life, that through progressive losing of my phone, I only had people's numbers in my phone who could help me use, you know, that I couldn't trust, or the guys I was running around with, who were these people that, like, I hated these guys. Those were the only moments of clarity I had, was I was in the car, and I'm like, who are these people? And I had no concept of anyone else besides myself. It is the truly essence of this disease, is just this pure self-centeredness. You know, I grew up on ego. I'm an only child, I must confess. I was told when I was growing up that if you could do whatever you want when you're old. You could become president if you want. If anything you can put your mind to, you can apply. I had the most supportive and wonderful, like, upbringing possible, but I had something inside of me. I had a disease of addiction, which weighed down on me, and just, I was trapped. You know, my friend talks about the bondage of self, and it's that ego inside of me that tells me that you don't need anybody else, that you got this, you just hold strong, you don't need to open your mouth at the meeting. And it was just, you know, you need to make this look good for the newcomer, you only need to share the good stuff, and, you know, but I was arrested, and I was thrust into NA, and I didn't have a choice, and I am grateful. I'm not an advocate of any sort of treatment or anything other organization like that, but they threw me in a van, a druggy buggy, and took me to two meetings every single day. 90 days, whether I liked it or not, we're going to a meeting. And honestly, I used to say my best decision-making ended me up in a seat in Narcotics Anonymous, but honestly, my best decision-making ended me up in that hospital bed over and over and over until they recognized me. And, you know, and that's why I come back to that, you know, that I didn't do anything to get here. This is grace. This is something being bestowed upon me that I am undeserving of, that I don't have, that the things that I have today and how I got here, I could never repay back to Narcotics Anonymous. This is an act of service that I will have to continually keep showing back up and not knowing how exactly it will ever be paid back, but constantly putting myself out there. You know, one of the most powerful statements that I always remember is, it is arrogant for me to believe or to assume to know where my message is going to come from, you know, or the ways that I have to carry out and help. You know, I like to look at the meeting schedule or look at who's speaking and judge who's going to carry the message that's going to save my life today. And, you know, and what I need to do. And or what like, nonsense I'm going to vomit on the meetings, who's going to help. You know, that somebody's like, hey, that guy's cool, he's clean, he looks kind of like me, and, you know, he can get intimate and raw like that, talk about how uncomfortable and scared he is. Maybe, you know, this place isn't so bad. You know, I don't have to look all, you know, great, and, you know, and I can learn, and I learned how to cry in a meeting. You know, it was one of the most powerful things, and that's, you know, there's an element of losing yourself in Narcotics Anonymous that I'm still learning about, because I'm so scared most of the time. That, you know, that the disease tells me that, you know, you guys really don't love me. You know, that tells me that when I go out to eat, you know, you got to buy an appetizer for the table, because everybody will love you and like you. And, you know, trying to be good, be a provider, you know. Always drive everywhere because you're always afraid of being left alone, left behind, the fear of rejection, the fear of abandonment at the core of my disease that pushes me on. And, you know, and I can just spin in that, and that same miserable behavior, just keeping myself alone. But Narcotics Anonymous has taught me I have a choice, you know. And it wasn't by any conscious, you know, directive that this program, you know, it just kept showing me up. And then, you know, sometimes I try to oversimplify and overcomplicate this, but it's, you know, sometimes it's really that easy, you know, that next right thing, you know. But oftentimes I don't know what that is, but I often do know what the next wrong thing is. I've been in this program long enough that I get this gut feeling, and it was just like, you shouldn't be talking to her. what would Dan say? Would I be would I be comfortable telling Dan about this later? And, you know, and it's just like, in that part of ego, but, you know, today I learned that, you know, I can tell Dan what's going on. And Dan's my sponsor. He's speaking up next, which is really intimidating. You know, but easing God in or easing God out, you know, it's that ego, it's that idea that I don't need anybody else, that I run on, that I spin through the world, that I smile, try to look good, go to the meetings, you know, do my service, you know. And, you know, but today I learned how I had a choice, and I don't know how this program slowly crept into my life, you know, what the attractiveness of this. I came into my first home group, and there was this beautiful redhead in Winchester, Virginia, and I was like, man, and it was just like, and she was like, why don't you show up early next week and help set up chairs? And I was like, sure, I'll do anything. And it was just like the next thing she asked me to do, it was just like, oh, it was just like, hey, can you make some coffee? And I was like, I make some bomb ass coffee. It was like, I have never made coffee in my life. And it was just like, but, you know, it was just bouncing, it was just learning what the meaning of, like, balance and moderation is. It's just balance going from the horse piss to the rocket fuel, just back and forth and back and forth. But so slowly, it's just like not understanding that there's some firm, fixed track that I'm going to be following in Narcotics Anonymous, that there's no expectation that you have to work this amount of steps in this amount of time and find this amount of willingness by this time and find your own higher power. It was a slow, arduous process of doing step 1, 2, 3 over and over a couple times, that little shuffle. And, you know, with 3 or 4 sponsors. I've had 5 sponsors on a fear of getting intimate, a fear of getting vulnerable, fear about talking about what's really going on. And, you know, but when it took time, and there's no set of when, but I kept showing up. That's the only thing that's most important, is to keep showing up to this program one day at a time, whatever it takes, whether it's following the cute redhead until you find the reasons that you want to be here, that I wanted to be here on my own. That I learned to believe, and, you know, that I found hope, that I found that there was a choice today, that I didn't have to be alone, I didn't have to be scared, that I could talk about the things that I didn't want to talk about, the things that I'm confused, you know, that, you know, the things that hurt me the most, that, you know, that I feel like I can't share with anyone, that, you know, that feel like they make me feel ugly, that no one could ever understand, the things I have to confront with and share with a sponsor. And, you know, learning when I finally got around to going through that fifth step, I learned how to recreate that relationship with other people, that level of intimacy, that level of feeling taken to the care of, that whole idea that everything's going to be okay if I believe and trust in this program. And my higher power is loving, caring, and greater than me, and that's all I need to understand. But my higher power has human fingers, and it puts people in my life to help me, to hurt me, to show me the way. And that, you know, I just have to have the courage to trust. And one of the most powerful things that one of my many sponsors have told me when sponsoring somebody was that, you know, you have to learn to learn nothing. That you're going to put your hand out there, not knowing what's going to happen, and you're going to get burnt. And it was just like, but you don't learn anything for that. Don't say you're not going to do that again. Put your hand out there with that same love and just openness. And you'll probably get burned again and a burn and again. And, you know, I got my house burglarized by sponsees, the Xbox gone, you know. It's just like, you know, but it doesn't stop me from inviting somebody over next time. And, you know, maybe not the same sponsee. But just learning to trust this program into my life and learning how to run on a different set of values, that I'm not always afraid about losing something. You know, living this life of abundance, that's the thing that I'm looking for today. And it's not the abundance of more espresso accessories that I'm currently obsessed on. It's like, I need this new Porta filter, and then we're going to buy these beans and this special grinder, and everything's going to be fantastic, and all my paraphernalia of coffee, and that's what I need. But no, it's just, you know, learning the most important thing right now today is just how many people can we pack in the car and go to Ocean City with, and how many people can we have together? And it's just like, how are we going to... I don't know, that's the simple thing that I learned today, is that the most important thing is making myself available to other people. You know, that I don't have to be... I read this thing in the Just for Today right before we came here. It says, through our new awareness, we are no longer feeling isolated from the rest of the human race. We may not understand why the world the way it is or why people sometimes treat one another so savagely, but we do understand suffering, and in recovery, we can do our best to alleviate it. When our individual contribution is combined with others, we become an essential part of a grand design. We are connected at last. You can't put that on a reading. You can't put that on a poster. You can't put that feeling that I never have to be alone ever again. That I can walk into any room and I just say a little few words to my higher power and look at all the smiling faces in the crowd. And even though there's a section of people from Northern Virginia over here that I know and I love, I know every one of you loves and cares about me because I said I was an addict. Because I had fought the same war and I had lost just as badly as you did. I am truly blessed to be in this program, to have an opportunity to be of service, to show up. You know what? I think I'll end it there. Thank you for letting me show up. Thank you.